Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the Sting stories when we come back. You know, marriage is a state-licensed business. It's a three-party limited general partnership between you, your spouse, and the state. And like any other state-licensed enterprise, it's regulated by the Welfare Department, the Department of Family Services, and the Family Court. And the best part about all of this is that you do not have any input into or say-so over the marriage, divorce, dissolution, custody, alimony, child support, protective service, protective custody, or restraining orders. But you get to pay for all of it. And if you fail to pay, then you go to jail. Now, marriage is the most important and expensive contract that you can engage in. It's more binding and costly than your military enlistment or your 30-year home mortgage. And you probably, if you're average, know a whole lot less about your obligations concerning marriage than you do your military obligation or your house payments. Now, 67% of all marriages in this country end in divorce, but whether you are a husband or wife, you do have rights, privileges, and immunities to advance, to protect, or to defend against any breach of this marriage contract. That's why you should know and understand the terms and conditions of your marriage contract before you marry. And you should write that contract instead of letting the state write it for you. Now, whether you're married or not, why don't you write for our free general law CD package and let me share some vital information with you about this thing of the law and the marriage contract. You can call us direct. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. 67. Remember, that's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, and best of all, it's free. If you're online, why don't you go to our webpage. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, and then click on to the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there, georgegordon.org. Well, we've been talking about contracts. A specific kind of contract. It's a sting contract. There was a movie out here called The Sting. Now, I'm going to get into some contracts here and show you how these contracts, sometimes need to be tested. And when you test them, they work out to be kind of a sting operation. Now, we think of the sting as being something that the government does. It's the undercover narcotics agent who goes out here and stings the drug dealer, sets him up, you know, in a transaction so that he can catch him breaking the law. Or it could be a theft ring, or it could be government agents and public officials who are taking bribes or breaking the law in some way. But there's a second side to this. You know, we citizens out here also have a role to play in this process called the sting, and it's called the Civil Rights Act of 1868. Citizens should keep tabs on their public officials and whether or not those public officials are following the law. And sometimes they don't. Yeah, that's right. Sometimes they don't. In fact, here's an example of that. Have you ever heard about public service or community service imposed by a court? You know, you go into the court and the judge says, well, I'm going to be pretty lenient on you today, and I'm going to sentence you to 200 hours of community service. You know, most people would say, well, 200 hours of community service is better than 200 hours in jail. And so they jump at the chance of going out here serving the community and practicing community service rather than going to jail or paying a fine or something like that. But is community service constitutional? Or let's put it another way. Is it unconstitutional? You know, there's quite a little void there between the two. Is it constitutional, or could it be that it's unconstitutional? What if you didn't want to perform community service? Could this be imposed upon you against your will and over your objection? What if the judge said, I don't want to put you in jail, but I'm going to make you serve this 200 hours of community service? Does community service violate any laws, rules, customs, usages, practices, statutes, judgments, etc.? Well, surprisingly, it does all of the above. But in order to test something like this, somebody has to conceive of a question. And when I saw this some years back, I said, you know, it looks like to me that community service is a violation of certain statutes and provisions in our law. Now, as it turns out, we were in some litigation going on in Boise, Idaho. And Judge Willis, when I was in court one time, had an option. He could fine me, and then I wouldn't pay the fine. He could jail me, and then I'd sue for false arrest and false imprisonment. Or he thought, well, what I'll do is I'll sentence this guy to 200 hours of community service. Now, to give you a little background, this is before 1986, and the states were charging people fines. And they were charging these fines in Federal Reserve notes in violation of Article 1, Section 10, which prescribes that no state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt. Now, a fine is a debt imposed by the court, and you have to pay it or go to jail. Well, if I don't have any means by which to pay the fine, then the law provides. The law does not expect you to do the impossible. So if you couldn't pay the fine, could they then enforce you or enforce jail upon you? Well, the Supreme Court looked at that in a case down in Pasadena, Texas, where a man had been jailed. He was a Mexican. He'd been jailed because he couldn't pay the fine. And when the case went to the Supreme Court, they said, wait a minute, that's peonage. You can't do that. The theory behind this is that if you had the money, you'd pay the fine. Well, what if you don't have the money and you can't pay the fine? Well, then the state of Texas said you can work it off at $10 a day by serving that time in jail. So the Supreme Court came back and said, no, I can't do that either. So now, based upon these factors, let's suppose that I don't have the money and can't pay the fine. The law doesn't expect me to do the impossible. And to impose jail would be peonage. Then what about community service? So Judge Willis, being very crafty, said, I'm going to sentence you to 200 hours of community service, which raised a legal issue in my mind. Can you do that? Can you impose community service against my will and over my objection? Now, at the time, this was an unknown. Today, we know the answer. The answer is no, you can't. And that's because the common law prohibits the impairing of your obligation to contract. Admiralty courts have jurisdiction in rem. They do not have jurisdiction in personam unless you volunteer. So let me run through the parameters of the story here for you, and then let's see how this sting comes down. Now, a sting is really a test. And what we're doing here is we're watching to see if somebody's going to break the law. And in this case, Judge Willis passed sentence, which was against the law. You can't do this. Well, he's all right unless you enforce this obligation. So here's what happens. You walk into court, and the judge says, I'm going to sentence you to 30 days in jail, or a $300 fine, or 200 hours of community service. You choose. So I said, well, let me try the community service, Judge. I really don't want to go to jail. and I really don't want to pay the fine. That is, I can't pay the fine. It isn't I don't want to pay the fine. I'm unable to. It's a just debt. Watch out for this one. I had a judge ask me one time, are you refusing to pay this just debt that you owe to the state of Idaho? And if you answer the question yes, you go to jail for contempt. You cannot refuse to pay the fine. So the answer has to be, well, if I had the money, I'd pay you in a heartbeat, but I don't have the money. So now, there was a judge one time who found a job for a fellow. He wasn't paying his child support, and so the judge found him a job. Now, he went to work at minimum wage at the Sears warehouse, and if he quits his job, that's contempt of court. So if he gets fired, now that's something beyond his control, but if he quits, now you've got contempt. Now remember, contempt of court is covered in, I think it's Exodus 22:28. Let me look that up quickly. Where it says, you shall not revile the judges. Exodus 22, verse 28, I believe it is. So if you're keeping track here, and yet here it is. You want to write this down. Exodus 22:28, you shall not revile the gods nor curse the ruler of your people. The word gods here is properly translated judges. So now, you know, when you come into court, one of the reasons that we stand up or that we don't give the judge a lot of flack is because he sits in the seat of Aaron the high priest. He is there in place of God to render judgment, just the same as if it was God himself sitting on the mercy seat in the Holy of Holies. This isn't anybody to be messing around with. Now, he may just be a magistrate judge or a Judge Judy, but that doesn't make any difference what his rank is. The fact is that both the common law and the civil law make it a criminal offense for you to revile the judge. So always tuck that one away in your heart. God doesn't care much for that contempt thing. So I took the judge's order, and I went down to the office that handles the people who go in to do this community service. And they have a form that you fill out, and you sign it. It's a contract. They have a contract for you to fill out. Now, it's called a community service form, and it's headed right up at the top. Now, a community service form is really a voluntary act on your part. And you fill this out, and they give you the rules of the game. And some of the rules of the game is that they do not pay unemployment insurance, minimum wage. They make no Social Security contributions or workman's compensation. And you agree to waive workman's compensation, Social Security, unemployment coverage, minimum wage, and so on. And when I read that, I said, well, now that's really interesting. Can you really do that? Now, if I went to work for somebody, he has to pay, by law, you know, he has to pay workman's comp and Social Security, unemployment, minimum wage. It's about 16% of the payroll tax. In other words, 16% of your payroll goes to these payroll taxes, and that's the employer's contribution. So I read it over very carefully, and I walked up to this lady, and I said, let me see if I understand this. When I sign this agreement, I'm going to go out and work, and you're going to collect money for my work. And you're not going to pay me any money because I'm working off my $300 fine by paying 200 hours of community service. Now, if you'll think about this for a minute, this is an hourly rate of how much? Let's take $300 here and divide that by 200 hours. That's a dollar and a half an hour. Now, at that time, minimum wage was $3.25 an hour. And I said, so you're not going to pay me minimum wage. He said, no, and you are going to have to agree to that. And now you're not going to take out any Social Security. In other words, you're not going to give me credit here for a dollar and a half an hour and then take out your employer's contribution. She said, we are not your employer. Well, if you're not my employer, then I must be an independent contractor then. And she said, no, you're not an independent contractor, you're a prisoner. Now, she's in error there. I'm not a prisoner. I walked into this office of my own free will. Now, it is true that I'm under sentence, if in fact you can sentence me to 200 hours of community service, but I'm not a prisoner. Nobody's brought me here, you know, nobody's brought me to equity here in chains now. Now, there's a signature line down on the bottom, and I said, well, okay, I don't want to sign this, and I don't want to make these agreements and stipulations, and but I want to comply with the court's order. So here I am, send me out, and I'll go to work. And she says, you cannot go to work until you sign this form. She was careful not to call it an agreement or contract, a covenant, or anything. You've got to sign this form. Now, let me pass on something to your boys and girls. A common law free man should be able to live his life from the day he's born to the day he dies and never sign his name a single time. And the reason for that is that every time you sign your name, you are impairing your liberty to some degree. Otherwise, there wouldn't be any point to you signing your name. Now, let me show you. If I sign my name to this agreement, I'm agreeing to perform 200 hours of community service. I'm agreeing to waive workman's compensation, Social Security, unemployment, and minimum wage. That means that if you send me out to cut somebody's grass, and I cut my foot off with the power lawnmower, I have to pay for that myself. There's no workman's compensation. When I get to be age 65, I cannot claim this 200 hours of community service as a part of my Social Security retirement. I'm going to go out and put out 200 hours of labor, but I'm not going to get anything in the way of Social Security for it. And furthermore, you're not going to pay me minimum wage. You're not going to pay me anything. That's the bottom line. In lieu of the $300 fine, you're going to take my 200 hours. Now, if I sign this agreement over here, now the court has in personam jurisdiction over me. Let me show you where this comes from. Brown, Volume 2, page 100, lays down the rule in these terms. The general rule, however, at present is that the Admiralty acts only in rem, and that no person can be subject to that jurisdiction but by his consent, expressed by his entering into a stipulation. So, just to bring you up to speed here, when we use a term like in rem, that means subject matter jurisdiction. Does the court have jurisdiction over traffic cases? Well, certainly it does, the traffic court. And so the judge says, well, can I impose a sentence upon you, a licensed driver? But I'm not a licensed driver. I didn't have a license. So now what are you going to do with me? Well, then we're going to prosecute you for driving without a license. Well, okay. Now you're going to fine me $300, but I don't have $300 to pay. Well, then we're going to put you in jail. But if you put me in jail because I don't have the $300, then you've got peonage. Well, then we're going to sentence you to community service. Well, in order to have jurisdiction over me and to sentence me, you have to have my consent, and I'm not going to give you my consent. I'm not going to sign the form. Now, the lady was really incensed. I don't think she'd ever had anybody refuse to sign the form before. And she said, well, if you don't sign the form, then you have to go to jail. Well, I already knew that jail wasn't an option. I don't have the money to pay the fine. So I went back to court, and I pointed this out to the judge. And the judge said, well, the choice is yours. You can either go down there and do the community service or face the consequences. You know, in other words, the judge said to me, well, If you don't want to sign the form, that's fine. But if you don't sign the form, then you can't do the community service. And then if you don't do the community service, then you have to face the consequences. Now, notice the choices that he gave me. Number one, I'm going to fine you $300 because you're driving without a license. Now, I don't have a job. I'm unemployed. I don't have any property. I don't have any way to pay this fine. And so the alternative to that is, well, 30 days in jail. You know, $10 a day. Well, we've already seen that the Supreme Court overturned that. Now, we do this every day. I mean, I'm not suggesting to you that your state doesn't do this. I'm just telling you that the state cannot do both. You can't practice peonage over here and collect fines and lock people up in jail. And they do it every day because of the ignorance of the people involved, but that doesn't mean that that's the way it works. Now, let's watch out for something here. Most of you people have driver's licenses, and you have given the state in personam jurisdiction and admiralty over you. The license is the prima facie evidence. It's the equivalent of seaman's papers. Now, you cannot work on a ship without seaman's papers. And it's an admiralty jurisdiction. You can't have in personam jurisdiction over a sailor without his consent. And that's why when you grab some guy in a bar when he's drunk, throw him on a ship, and then take him out in the ocean and inform him that he's on his way to China, that's called shanghaiing. That's kidnapping. Shanghaiing a man is kidnapping. That's against the law. Now, if you'll pay attention here to what we're dealing with here, the judge is complicit in cunningly coercing people into waiving their rights due to their ignorance. The judge is not forcing me to do jack squat. He simply said, the law provides that in the case that you drive your car and you break the law, this is an admiralty court. And I'm going to, as the chancellor here of the Admiralty Court, I'm going to sentence you to a fine. He could do that if I had a license, but if I don't have a license, he doesn't have in personam jurisdiction. So the next step then, well, I'm going to sentence you to jail if you don't pay the fine. That's peonage. That's prohibited. Now, notice that these are common law rules. These are common law laws. The admiralty works with in personam jurisdiction coupled with in rem jurisdiction. Now, he's got the in rem, but he doesn't have in personam until I sign. Now, he normally has it because you've signed the driver's license, marriage license, birth certificate, or something else. In this case, he doesn't have it because I don't have the license. All right, so now, next step is, notice the judge says, or face the consequences. Well, what are the consequences? Well, I guess he's going to lock me up in jail. So I said, thank you very much, judge, and I walked out of the court. I've never heard from that day to this anybody arresting me or jailing me for not performing the community service. So now that tests a legal issue. The 13th Amendment bars involuntary servitude. Now, that doesn't bar involuntary servitude from the Bible. God has provided for involuntary servitude. God has provided for slaves, bond servants, man servants, maid servants. And you can be taken under the common law, under the law of God, you can be taken into captivity. You can be compelled to serve. But our civil law does not admit to that. And since most people don't practice the Mosaic Law, they don't practice the law of God, therefore we're not involved then with the common law. We're involved with admiralty. Now, I'm not here to tell you, you know, that you ought to give up your admiralty privileges for common law responsibility or rights. I'm just here to tell you that that's the way the game is played. And so, let me give you another example of a case in point. It was over in Crawford County, and I was tooling down the road one day, and Ranger Rick stopped me, and he said, hey, I'd like to see your license, registration, and insurance. And I pointed out to him that I was not a citizen of the United States, did not have a U.S. license, did not have these documents that he was looking for. He says, well, okay, you're under arrest. And I said, well, let's hurry because it's already 4:30 and I don't want to miss dinner. I'll be darned if he didn't dog himself over there until we got there about 5:30 and I missed dinner. Now, that's kind of nasty. You got to go until tomorrow morning before you're going to get anything to eat. So you go hungry all night. Talk about punishments, you know, cruel and unusual. So some time went by, and this case finally came to trial. And I was charged with driving without a license. Didn't have registration, didn't have insurance. So the prosecutor null prossed on the other two, but there was one that they wanted to stick to me, and that was the insurance. They said, hey, you don't have any insurance. So in the trial, the prosecution came in. They said, hey, this guy's driving a car here, and he doesn't have any insurance. And so when it was my half of the case, I got on the witness stand, and I said, it is true that I do not have any insurance. And I don't have any insurance because insurance violates the law of God in that it is limited liability in place of strict liability, which is the rule of law under Exodus 21:28-36. And the judge in this case, he's an old man, his name was Judge Like, and he said to me, he said, but under the Financial Responsibility Act of 1976, the state requires that you have insurance. Now, that's true. The judge has not lied to me. He has not misrepresented the truth in this matter under the Financial Responsibility Act of 1976. But he has omitted telling me the whole story. The law does not require that you have insurance. It requires that you be financially responsible for your actions, and you can do that in more than one way. You can have a property bond, personal recognizance bond, or you can have insurance. So you have three ways in order to satisfy that financial responsibility. Now, there's actually a fourth way to do that. Personal recognizance bond in the event that it isn't filed. In other words, if I didn't go out and file a formal bond, the state would have remedy against me if, in fact, I did not have a driver's license. If I had a driver's license, then I would come under the Financial Responsibility Act. But if I didn't have the license, then I wouldn't come under the terms and conditions of the Act. Because remember, in admiralty jurisdiction, in personam jurisdiction isn't there unless the person volunteers. So in order to get you on board a ship, we have to get you to go down and get seaman's papers. So assuming that you wanted to sail on the Carnival steamship, you want to be a worker on the ship, you have to have seaman's papers in order to do that. So you have to go to the Coast Guard and say, hey, I want to get seaman's papers. And then they'll take a look at you and see if you qualify. And if you do, they'll issue the seaman's papers. And if they don't, you cannot work on that ship on the high seas. You could work on that ship if it was on land, which is why here in the Midwest, when you have a gambling casino, they're always on ships in the river. Now in Nevada, they have them on land, but here they have them on ships. That's to bring them under admiralty jurisdiction. So let's just take this a step further now. So Judge Like asked me this question. He said, well, now, Mr. Gordon, let's suppose for the sake of our argument here, you were to have an accident and you caused some people some damage here. How would you pay for that damage? And I said, I would pay for it with gold and in gold coin. And I took a Krugerrand. This is before the 1986 Act now, Tax Reform Act. And we didn't have any American gold. Well, we had the old American gold, but we didn't have the new. And we're still in that limbo, you know, between House Joint Resolution 192 and the Tax Reform Act of 86. And so I said I'd pay for it with gold coin. In fact, I had one with me, and I dropped it on the counter in front of the microphone so that the appeals court could hear the ring of my argument. And then he said, well, let's suppose that the damages exceeded the amount of gold that you had. Then what would you do? I said, in that case, then you would have the bailiff take me over to the doorpost and bore a hole through my right ear and then sell me to the aggrieved party until the year of release or until the jubilee, whichever was required to satisfy the debt. And he was kind of surprised about that. And he said, but the 13th Amendment is a collateral estoppel to involuntary servitude. Again, the judge is correct. The 13th Amendment is a collateral estoppel to involuntary servitude. And I said, I concede that point to you, Judge, but it does not forbid or preclude voluntary servitude. And I just volunteered. Now, if you can volunteer into admiralty, you can volunteer into common law. The common law provides that if you are a debtor and you can't pay your debts, you have to be sold for your debt. What proceeds out of your mouth, boys and girls, cannot return again. Numbers 30 comes into play and says, hey, if you've made this agreement, then you have to fulfill the terms and conditions of it. And if you don't, then we're going to have to sell you into bond servitude. Now, when I volunteered into bond servitude, I don't have a license. I've expatriated. I'm not a citizen. Now, what are you going to do? Well, the answer in that case, it was to null pros, which means, well, we're going to dismiss in the interest of justice because we don't want cases like this going into the appellate courts. We want to stonewall this. We really don't want to know what the answer is. It's kind of like a black riding the front of the bus. Can you imagine where we would be if the bus driver had said, well, okay, we're going to let this one black ride the front of the bus. We got all the rest of them riding the back. We don't want to test this issue and find out whether or not a citizen of the United States can be compelled to ride on a particular portion of the bus. But they said, yeah, we want to test that. Well, then when they tested that, they found out the answer to that, didn't they? So now, you know, we're oftentimes, you know, we learn from our mistakes. And now judges and states are pretty crafty. And when they come up against a case like this, they say, you know, I don't think we want to test that. We don't want to go there. Well, Judge Willis never tested the question of this workman's comp, Social Security, unemployment, and minimum wage. He said, you can face the consequences. I said, okay, I'll face the consequences. What are they going to be? Well, it's not going to be anything because we're just going to forget it. And I said, okay, that's exactly where I wanted this case to go. So now you can see that when you test, you know, if you want to get down to where the rubber meets the road and you want to test this legal issue with a little practice and with a little coaching and with a little education, and remember, you want to be on the right side of the issue going in, because if you're on the left side of the issue, they're going to drop the hammer on you, and you'll find out that, yes, indeed, they can lock you up in jail. And yes, indeed, they can take your property from you. But when they do that, it's because you've got a contract. Hey, we're at the halfway point. I got to give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about The Law Hour and editorial review, then go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective, 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. And the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has a radio log schedule and archives. All of it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, click on to the archives page, and download that free general law CD package right there. georgegordon.org, go to the archives page. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine, they're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. So if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about the sting stories. Sometimes stings don't work very well. Sometimes you set up a circumstance, or you work toward a judicial adjudication of a controversy, as we did here with the case here with Judge Willis talking about community service. Now, if the judge had seized me and thrown me in jail, I would suffer a damage, and if I suffered damage, I'd have an action against the judge. This is why judges now, more and more, are carrying malpractice insurance. See, judges have protection. Judges can't be sued in their official duties or capacities, but when they act outside their jurisdiction, they can. Prosecuting attorneys have immunity. Judges have immunity. And judges and prosecutors do not step outside of their jurisdiction or their official duties very often. It does happen. In the United States, there's about 600 cases a year coming down, last time I saw a number, against judges, and about 10% of them are successful. So about 60 cases out of 600. It isn't very many. Judges typically don't make mistakes. When they do, they're overturned in the appellate process, which is the process that is designed by Moses, designed by God with Moses out at Mount Sinai. So here in Anglo-Saxon administration, when you're going to appeal, actually it's called a writ of error, but in admiralty it's called an appeal, and almost all of us now are involved in admiralty. They're very seldom that you ever see a common law action here in the United States. I imagine there might be one or two a year, but it's very seldom. Everybody in America is involved in some form of contract with their government and involuntarily walk into admiralty. For instance, all sailors all of you merchant mariners, all of you sailors, you all have contracts. That's what brings you under Admiralty, Maritime, and the Uniform Code of Military Justice. You can't get on a ship without one. Now, I showed you here a day or two ago that in one case, we sidestepped that. We took a child, 11 years old, into a hospital, didn't sign the admission contract, didn't get the seaman's papers, and the law required that the hospital admit the child because there was a statute on the books that says hospitals cannot refuse admittance if there is a question of child abuse. You got to take the kid in. The hospital did. Now the question arises, well, who's going to pay for that? Well, now, if at a later date I had signed or agreed to pay the bill, and then here they would have in personam jurisdiction because I signed. But now when we refuse to sign, oftentimes when you refuse to sign, they will say, well, you'll have to face the consequences. You'll have to go to jail. You'll have to do this, that, or something else. Well, wait a minute. Have you tested that? Do you know that? I'll give you a little illustration here. A guy by the name of Ziggy Crothers one time. He's an inspector in the Vietnam War. Now, Ziggy takes a look at this Vietnam War and he says, you know, I don't think I want to do this. And so one day he gets a letter in the mail and says, greetings, you've been inducted into the United States Army. Well, what that is a subpoena. And it comes under the subpoena power of the police power. And so you have to make your appearance. And Ziggy showed up at the Army Induction Center just like he was supposed to. But Ziggy had already determined that he was not going to volunteer to go into the military. He wanted to go to Leavenworth for 4 years rather than Vietnam for one. And very seldom that you'll run across somebody that makes up his mind, you know, in advance, that here's what I want to do. So they took him into a big room, he said, and there was 23 other guys there, a total of 24 guys. So evidently they induct you in, take your oath in groups of 24. See, I didn't know that before he told me that. I didn't know if it was 10, 20, 50 or what, but he said there's 24. He strategically placed himself on the left end of the second rank. They lined him up in two ranks, 12 in each row. Somebody said, take one step forward, raise your right hand, and repeat after me. Ziggy took one step back, one step to the left, and said, wait, wait, wait. If I do this, will I be waiving any of my civil or constitutional rights? And Ziggy was escorted out of the room. And then about 15 or 20 minutes later, he was brought back into the big room. And he said they went to work on him at about 1:30 in the afternoon until a quarter to five. And they threatened him and intimidated him. And they played the Mutt and Jeff routine on him. And they said, if you don't do this, you're going to go to Leavenworth. If you don't do this, we're going to take you out in the alley and just beat you half to death. And so on down the line. Now, this kid, you know, he's about, I don't know, 18, 20 years old, you know. And now he registered for the draft, just like he was supposed to. He got his letter, and he shows up. And a legal question arises. What is it that makes you a soldier in the Army? How do you get to be a soldier? And the answer is, it's when you take your oath of office. It's when you take that oath, you take your step forward. So he refused to take the step forward. And so a legal question arises. Is this the act that's going to get him thrown into Leavenworth? And the answer is no, it's not. It isn't. Now, in the Bible, this is the common law now, in the Bible, in Matthew 5, verses 33 through 37, Jesus said that you're not to forswear yourself, that you're not to take an oath. And in James 5:12, that's repeated. Now, that's a statute that comes from Leviticus chapter 6. It is against the law for us to step forward and take an oath. Now, we do it all the time. We take these oaths, you know, when we, well, like President Obama, you know, when he becomes President of the United States, he stands up there and raises his hand, and he takes the oath of office. All public officials do that. Jurors do that. Many people do that when they join clubs and organizations. You know, taking an oath is pretty common. It's a criminal act. It's a violation of the law of God, but then, you know, most people don't care much about that one way or the other. Then, when they get drafted into the army or they find themselves in jury duty or something like that, they complain a lot. It's like the income tax. People complain about the income tax, but that's a voluntary act on your part. Social Security is voluntary. The military service is voluntary. Now, I know somebody's going to say, well, I was drafted in the Army. My dad, if he was alive today, he would take exception to me right now. He would say, well, I was drafted into the Army. Let me ask you this. Do you know of anybody that was drafted into the Army, taken against his will and over his objection, and forced to serve in the military against his will? Do you know of anybody? Well, let's analyze that for a minute and let's see if that's true. I don't know of anyone. And there's a very subtle modality that's being used here to cunningly coerce people into waiving their rights due to their ignorance. You know, you're the net sum total, the product of your education. You know, it's what you learned to do. It's what you learned to do. And we learn to go get marriage licenses, birth certificates, and driver's licenses, and we learn to sign up for the draft. And then we complain later. Well, anyway, at 4:45, they let Ziggy go back home with the promise that he would be arrested, he would be jailed, and then he'd be prosecuted, and he'd spend 4 years in Leavenworth. Now, in fact, Ziggy went home. They gave him a one-way bus ticket back. Now, he came down on his own nickel, but they gave him a bus ticket to go back home on. And they never prosecuted him. Now, we thought that was pretty interesting. Now, the letter said that you have to appear at the Army Induction Center. What that means is it's like a subpoena that says you have to appear for jury duty. Now, God help you people if you don't show up for jury duty, but then the question arises, well, do I have to serve on the jury? Serving on the jury is a voluntary act. Appearing to be examined for jury duty is a statutory requirement. It goes with a part and parcel with citizenship. Citizenship is an implied contract. It's an implied adhesion contract. You're required under the police powers to perform. Now, once you get there for jury duty, you're going to be examined to see if you're competent and qualified. Let's suppose that the examiner says to you, have you formed any opinions as to whether or not this guy's guilty or innocent? And naturally, you always say, well, no, I don't know one way or the other. What if you were to answer yes? Yes, as a matter of fact, I have formed an opinion. Well, what is that opinion? My opinion is he's guilty as hell. He would not have been arrested if he hadn't done something wrong. Now, do you think you're going to qualify for jury duty here? Or do you think you're going to be excused? So, the jury duty requires that you volunteer. It requires that you answer the questions correctly. No, I don't have any opinion at all. And then the judge will say, well, you qualify, and so therefore we're gonna take you. Now, when you do that, the judge swears you in. He says, okay, now you jurors over there, raise your right hand and repeat after me. I, Joe Smedley here, I promise that I will take the law as the judge gives it to me, and I'm going to follow the instructions of the court and render a true and correct verdict. He takes your oath. Now, Numbers chapter 30 comes into play here and says, whatever proceeds out of your mouth can't return again. You're volunteering for jury duty when you take the oath. All right. Now, same thing happens with the military. When you join the Army, you go down to the Army Induction Center, the Army recruiter, and you sign a contract in there. Later, when the date comes, you go to the base, you know, like my son did. He went over to Fort, what was it? No, he went over to Kentucky. It was, I don't know, Fort Campbell or Fort, no, it was Fort Knox, I guess it was Fort Knox, where they have all the gold, or used to have the gold. And that's where he took his oath. He joined the Army in Boise, Idaho. But he took his step forward and swore the oath when he got over there to Fort Knox. Now, that's when you join. Now, when you're drafted into the Army, they work it just backwards. They give you a subpoena, and they say you have to appear. He appeared. And then they want to see if you're competent and qualified, so they say take a step forward, raise your right hand, and repeat after me. Then once you have taken this oath, what proceeds out of your mouth can't return again. Now you've qualified for military service. Now they take you into another room and they give you the paperwork and here, fill this out and sign here. And so that's the way they cunningly coerce you into waiving your rights. You see, the 13th Amendment is a collateral estoppel to involuntary servitude. If the government had the power to require you to serve in the military, you don't have to sign anything. My dad never had me sign anything when he told me to feed the dog, take out the garbage, make your bed, and wash the dishes. He had the power to enforce those orders upon me, and he just did. Now, later on, when you go to school, do you ever notice you have to register for school? I tested this one time. I'll give you a little illustration here. My oldest boy, Ted, he was, I think he was 14, 9th grade, 10th grade, maybe something like that. Now, they have a compulsory education law in Idaho. Keeping in mind now, my boy, Ted, has a birth certificate, and I had a marriage license, and we're under the law. We're an admiralty jurisdiction, and we, you know, we have to obey all the laws of the state. This is back in the early days. And so I went up to the school with him, and there was a form to fill out. And it's, you know, you fill out this form. And so I looked at the form, and so I took it over to the registration desk, and I handed it to her. And she says, well, this has to be filled out. And I said, well, I've read it, and I don't like the terms and conditions of the form, and I am not going to fill it out and sign it. And she says, you have to, because if you don't, your son cannot attend school without registration. I said, well, that's fine. And then she said, if he doesn't fill this out and he doesn't attend school, he will then be truant, and then you will be subject to the truancy laws. Well, boys and girls, doesn't this sound like the little girl that has to be admitted to the hospital because the law requires in child abuse cases that they be admitted? Now the question arises, well, who's going to pay? Now you see, when people tell you that you have to sign this, then if you don't, there's going to be some penalty. I showed you this the other day. We were talking about legal quotations, and I said there can be no sanction against somebody for exercising his constitutional rights. You can't be compelled into a contract against your will and over your objection. No, you are, you have been, and you will continue to be. I don't deny that. But there aren't any penalties or sanctions that can be imposed upon you if you don't. Now, there's one more little factoid that comes in here. Oftentimes, people get prosecuted, and then they don't know how to plead their cause. And we talked about that the other day with Reynolds. Reynolds had two wives. I don't think he had any marriage licenses, but we don't know that. So he pled into a fiction of law and then was prosecuted and convicted. I think Reynolds was innocent. But because he pled into a fiction of law and then didn't know how to defend, he was found guilty and he served his sentence. That happens all the time. So most people, because they're fearful and timid and they don't know how to defend, they then become cunningly coerced into waiving their rights due to their ignorance. Well, then that's not the court's fault. That's not the government's fault. The theory behind American law is that the sovereign power resides in the citizenry, and the citizens then, the sovereigns, elect their public servants. Now, boys and girls, this presupposes that the sovereigns are at least as smart as, at least as competent as their servants. Don't we presume that the master is at least as smart as his butler, his baker, his cook, his chauffeur? Do we allow our butlers and bakers and chauffeurs and cooks to induce us to sign contracts and then give them our inheritance? Now, I want to tell you that here in America, we have, and we will continue to because of our ignorance. But the theory of law is that the master is smarter than his servants, and therefore his servants serve the master. Here in America, we have the servants who are the masters and who are directing their masters and have taken their inheritance. I know it's kind of crazy and upside down, but they have been cunningly coerced into waiving their rights because of their ignorance. We here at the law school think that you ought to at least know what your rights are or what they were. Now, if you've signed on to these contracts, you're bound to, the law requires, that is, the law of God and the law of the state requires that you fulfill the obligation that you've contracted for. But you don't have to contract for any more. You see, once you've contracted into the Army, now you owe this enlistment, but you don't have to re-enlist. It is true that you signed up for Social Security and you're enlisted in Social Security, but you could rescind, you know, you could un-enlist. So I just thought I'd throw that out there. And that's what some of these sting operations are about. The reason that we wanted to test community service is to see, does the state have the power to compel you to serve against your will and over your objection? The answer is no. Ziggy Crothers in the test there at Atlanta, Georgia, testing the Army and the draft. Is this because we're un-American and we're anarchists? No, not at all. Where are the lines drawn in the sand? Who has the power? Who has the authority? Is it the public servants or is it the citizenry? And we think that there is a clear distinction, you know, between the citizen with rights and the public servants who are their servants. All right, I'm out of time. I got to give you a final reminder here that you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review, and that we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and the law hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the law hour website is updated weekly, and it has a radio log schedule and archives. And all of it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. That's for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, our time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.